Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Premier League Review Show with myself, Gav Mack, Ed Hall, and Stephen Cotton. How are you, gentlemen?
What's up?
I'm wonderful. There's so much to talk about, and I'm so ready to just let's go, let's have it.
Everyone get gassed off that intro now, because there was a time when I didn't bat an eyelid about it, but now I've kind of just like feels part of that.
If you guys could see the behind the scenes thing that we have at the bottom here, when you see people off camera and stuff, when the video is playing, all you see is all three of us like.
So you can follow us on all social media at Top Football, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, and if you put Top Football into Google, our name comes up first. How wonderful is that? I still buzz off the fact that happens. It's brilliant stuff. But anyway, let's be honest. We need to talk about football, don't we? And why don't we start with the game that kicked off at 7:15, and that was Leicester versus Brighton. I need a moment. That's what it is. I was dual screening this game.
Yeah, I watched this.
It was the Arsenal on the main screen. Don't know why, and then it was the Leicester game via Amazon Prime on the iPad, and it was just Leicester domination the whole game. They just looked in full control the whole game. Leicester won 3-0. Madison got a brace, and Jamie Vardy scored for half time. Cotton, you said you were watching this game.
Like you said, Leicester just all over it. Brighton just didn't have any answer to anything that came at them. Brendan Rodgers, halfway through the half, switched your man. Is it James Justin? He switched him from left to right to go up against their slower right back. And that was it. That was the game changer. It was just completely Leicester dominance, like you said. Vardy, who scored the first goal? It was Vardy scored the first.
Madison. It was a cross from James Justin, and it was cleared away. And I literally turned away, and then I was like, "Oh, I'm just going to watch the rest of the Arsenal game." And I turn around and I see Madison wheeling off in celebration. It's like, "Oh, mate."
Yeah, Matt Ryan could have done a lot more. The second goal so beautifully worked. Honestly, you could see the play three steps ahead. Like, you saw that the pass over was on, then the ball in behind, then the cross into Vardy was just perfect. But I mean, I didn't really see much of the second half, but the highlight of this game, the Madison goal on the 44th minute.
Yeah, Madison's goal is beautiful, man.
Gets the ball inside the box. He's jinking, he's turning, like, cuts back in onside himself like a couple of times, takes it around one or two players, and then just shifts it from his right foot to his left foot. Bends it top corner, like it's one of those when it hits the side net and it curls round the side net and into the top corner.
That's the Madison that we want to see, though, isn't it?
It is.
Where's that Madison been all season? He's not been that player anymore. Because, you know, like, there was always the conversation of, like, when England play, you know, if we are going to play like a man in behind Kane, who do we want to see? Do you want to see Madison? Do you want to see Grealish there? Do you want to see Foden? You know, he's not been part of that conversation much this season. Is it an attitude thing, or is it just lack of form? Because he's not been injured.
He had a similar problem last year, didn't he? Because I thought last year he had a good first half to the season, and then he kind of just dwindled out. I know he got injured towards the very end, but he was out of form as well, though.
I was just going to say, like, I hate to be like we hate it when all the youth players get like tarred with the same brush and it's like, oh, they're whatever. But he is one of those players. He is always getting caught drinking with Grealish, and he is always, like, he's a bit of a party boy, any Madison. So I don't know whether that plays into it a little bit or not. I don't know. But like you said, there must be a reason for his form to decline so rapidly and so heavily. But he had a really good game today. He completely controlled the midfield.
Go on. Do it.
Do what?
Just do it.
Go to the next game.
Go to the next game.
Manchester United 0, Manchester City 0. Oh, okay, now.
Oh, nice try. I think we've got an intro for this one, don't we?
No, next week. We might have it. Yeah. As of next week, I'm sure we're gonna have to have it. Hey, look, Arsenal finally got Aubameyang scoring goals.
You love
so look, there are positives from this game. Yes. Arsenal 0, Burnley 1. It's the first time that Burnley have taken the lead against Arsenal in the Premier League era, let alone got a victory. And we did this for our watch-along, myself and Ed. Cotton couldn't wait until the final whistle to hop in right at the end of the old watcher and just before the...
Down here dancing.
He was there. From an Arsenal point of view, there... We mentioned it during the watch along, but I'm feeling that there has got to be something happening behind the scenes. The players do not want to play for Arteta whatsoever. Personnel wise, I don't think Arsenal have got that much of an issue. I think player wise, they're fine. You know, they are a minimum top six side, and you can argue that they are creeping towards a top four position. But on the pitch, there's just nothing happening, and I want to... There needs to be an inquest as to what is happening at Arsenal right now. Ed, you watched the game with me.
Yeah, that was a very boring 90 minutes of football. I don't think Burnley even played particularly well, but they didn't need to. Burnley was more than happy with a point there. The only reason they got a foothold in the game is because you went down to 10 men. Mm. You are very lacklustre. I feel like it's just... We don't know what to do with the ball. We'll whip a ball in. But who are you whipping a ball into? It's not like you've got, no disrespect, so it's not like you've got like a Benteke in there or an Andy Carroll. I don't know if they're great examples, but...
Well, they are. They're brutes in the box, aren't they? I mean, like, there was a stat that came up in the first half that said that Arsenal put 10 crosses into the box. But what were they... Who are they aiming for?
That's it. I mean on the way up, I mean, they want to improve on last season. You've lost four home games in a row. Four.
Lucien Favre lost his job for less.
It's enough. Like, that is crazy for Arsenal. Not even just dropped points. They've just got beaten four times at home.
Do you know what as well? Like, in like response to this game, Mikel Arteta has just been tactically outclassed by Sean Dyche.
Now, I want to ask you a question on this, and it came up earlier on today from an Arsenal fan. Look at someone like a Sean Dyche to take over, and would he be able to improve Arsenal?
I don't know if you want a Sean Dyche type. I don't think your squad is rugged enough. Like, you've got players like Tierney that think they can scrap, but if it actually came to it, it'd get slapped out. Yeah. I don't think you want someone boisterous. I think you do need someone adventurous that wants to play nice football. Like you said, you've got the players. Someone like Hasenhüttl, someone decent that wants to go play expansive football.
Yeah, Ed mentioned Nagelsmann.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly that. Like you said, right, I honestly don't think there's any excuse for the players you've got to be where you are. And this is the thing, like, we always say this about like Newcastle fans, but Arsenal fans have a reason sort of to have this about them. But Arsenal fans still think it is a big club, but they still go on like it's 1999 and it's Vieira versus Keane every week. So on one week, they're bigging up like Aubameyang's best striker in the Prem, and Saka's the best young prospect in the league. Okay, so if that's the case, how come week in, week out, these players aren't performing? They're not doing anything. Like, it can't be both sides of the coin.
I mentioned something a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Man United in the Champions League and why they can't... I know Man United have now been promoted into the best European trophy competition in Europe, but after the first 3-4 games in the Champions League, the way that Man United were playing was brilliant. They was looking expansive. They looked comfortable. They looked fluid. They looked confident. Why can't they install that sort of mentality into the Premier League? Why is there such a difference in the Premier League to the Champions League. And I remember that we all of us having a conversation saying it was a different type of opposition. No, ignore the opposition. It's the players on the pitch, how like, when they're in possession of the ball, look how freely they're passing the ball around. Arsenal are doing that at Europa League. And once again, yes, the quality of the... like Dundalk, you know, who cares about Dundalk? However, it's the confidence when the ball is at feet, when they've got the ball in like just in front of the back four, and they're looking around thinking, right, okay, who's here? And there's players making runs and moves and doing everything they want. Why is the main team, like the first team of Arsenal, not putting that performance and that level in the Premier League?
Because they don't want to play the style of football. I think that can only be it. Like, you've got the problem that, like, we have a similar problem where your strikers, Lacazette and Aubameyang, also get utilised too much as wide men. They go out wide because they have to go out and pick the ball up, and then they stick a cross in. Who's in the box to get the cross? No one, because it's where they should be on the end of a cross, but they're having to do their own
work. There was one in particular that happened like that, where Aubameyang found himself out wide and he's crossed it in. Tierney's on the penalty spot and he's having a swivel shot with his right peg. That should be Tierney putting that ball in for Aubameyang, not the other way around. Just quick for the Blue Boys Network. Quick one, going back to deadline day, how many Everton players in the combined Everton Arsenal team? Hey, look, man for man, I still stick man for man. I'll stick very, very similar to the team that I picked before. The Arsenal players are not performing at the moment. It's not the level of clientele. I think the level of clientele is there. I don't feel that they've got the right manager in place. But let's not take anything away from Burnley here. Burnley turned up. They had a game plan. It worked. And they're walking home with 3 points.
Is that to be credited? Because I could give you my game plan when coming against Arsenal right now. Because I know exactly what you're going to do, because you do the same thing all the time. I said to you, Gav, what changes is Arteta actually making? He's changing the personnel, but what changes? He goes, well, you're now playing in his position. Your game plan's exactly the same. No one comes on with anything different. So Burnley, every manager's going to come to the Emirates with the same game plan. As much as I'm glad Burnley did it, it's not to be credited.
We've had this discussion before, Gav, like every year, countless times, no matter who the manager is, whether we're talking about United, whether we're talking about Mourinho, Van Gaal or whatever, I can't stand static managers, right, that have, this is our formation, this is our system, this is how we play. It doesn't matter if we're coming up against a 4-4-2, a 3-5-2, a 5-4-7-8-9, we're going to play this way when we're not going to adapt to their style. And if you don't adapt to other people's styles...
Bad manager.
This is what happens.
Yeah. And this is Arsenal been doing this for a couple of years now. They did it in the end of the Wenger period. They did it during Emery. They did it in the short time of Ljungberg. And they're doing it right now. Arsenal have a set way of playing. And they couldn't give two hoots about who they're playing against. And that, as you both alluded to, is poor management.
Mm-hmm. Quick question for you, just moving away from the management thing. Xhaka's red all day, stupid.
Yeah, red. He's put his arm around. Like, when he saw it first time, I was like, oh, that's a bit silly, isn't it? Well, they're both going to get a yellow card here for handbags. But then you look at the replay, he's put his hand around his frigging neck, man.
Yeah.
What's he playing at? So there's no Xhaka for the next game.
No,
Pepe is coming back, which is wonderful. And there's no Bellerin, because Bellerin picked up his fifth yellow card of the season. Now,
so you'll win the next game.
Yeah.
Southampton.
The Xhaka one, but what about the Elneny one? Because I'm very, 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 very shocked that they looked at a replay on VAR and decided to give a yellow for that. I'm really shocked.
I don't understand why they've given a yellow card. If you go into VAR, it's a red card or nothing. How many times have I said that's not what they do on VAR? And they've just gone against their own rules, their own ruling on it.
Does the Premier League have a different rule? Because you know what we're like.
Probably.
They make it up as they go along.
Oh, right. Well, they change it before
the game. So are Arsenal going to survive relegation this season?
You'll survive relegation, but I don't expect 17th.
In all seriousness, just before we move on, like, Gav, honestly, like, it's a write-off. Like, what would you want to see from Arsenal this season now? Like, where do you want to finish? Where would you be at? What's your aspirations now?
I turned around to Ed. I said, 10th, I'll be happy with 10th right now. How sad is that?
But
from where Arsenal are right now, if you said to me, you could have 10th right now, I'd have to take it.
But the problem is for you, you've picked a season where there's 10, 15 teams that decided to play well and go for the title. And you've picked a really bad season to be very bad.
Because
you've got to fight the likes of Southampton, Leicester. There's teams in there and around
Villa
the top
are
10.
Doing bits.
Only 4 points behind you now. Yeah. Fulham have got 8 points now, I believe.
I know. Yeah. They're only 5 points behind. Fulham are 5 points behind us.
And Brighton have West Brom. Brighton have Fulham. So,
yeah, mad stuff. Let's talk about Fulham because I feel they were very unlucky today. Very, very unlucky. They had a number of opportunities today. It was Fulham 1, Liverpool 1. And it was Fulham who actually took the lead. And before they took the lead, they should have had a penalty, Cotton.
Mate, I'm honestly fuming. Like I said, I didn't see stuff until today. I tried to keep... I didn't want to see anything on Twitter or anything to cloud my judgment before I saw it for myself. And I watched it. I saw it in full speed. I saw Fabinho wipe him out. Doesn't touch the ball. Goes through his foot. They VAR'd it. And I was like, all right, cool. And then I saw them taking the corner. And I was like, what?
What?
Like, I honestly thought I was tripping. I was like, there's no way. I was like, Ed, do you think it's a penalty?
I said to Gav, when I see it in regular speed, I thought it was a penalty. When they kept showing the replays, it depends which replay you showed me. It was like flipping a coin. But they went over it so long, and kept replaying it, and kept replaying it. And I was like, well, then it's clearly not clear and obvious.
I felt the replays that they were showing for VAR were a little bit, And then when you look at it at half-time, when they've got it in the studio, they show me two replays, very quick succession, one from the right-hand touchline, and then one from the near post. And from the right-hand touchline, I'm thinking, looks like a pen. Not quite sure, though. And they show me it on the near the near post angle. And it's just he's taking him out, man. Yeah, that's his standing leg. It's a penalty all day. I've seen VAR turn over worse decisions than that.
I was honestly speechless, man. I honestly couldn't believe it. And to be fair, look at Fabinho's facial expressions when it's not given.
He had a really bad game, bless him. So I wouldn't say mistake because I think he's been... nothing short of brilliant filling in centre back, but that was.
And you have to remember, there's not
game where
it.
I remembered he was a midfielder. From minute one, every decision he made was bad. And Matip wasn't much support either. Fulham played well. Fulham played well. I'll be honest with you. Liverpool, I said to Gav Price, to the Arsenal watch along, that I think for the first time under Klopp's tenure, I'm starting to see complacency drop into Liverpool. If we were playing Tottenham, a different team would have come out today. It was like we was expecting to steamroll 3-1 or something like that and then focus on Anfield midweek.
We said this after the restart, though, didn't we? Like as soon as Liverpool, like it was like not mathematically, but as soon as it was like no one's catching them, it was just foot off the gas, weren't it? And it was...
Yeah, they haven't picked up since then. I don't care what anyone says. I don't think Liverpool have looked that convincing since they won the title. And to be honest, there was a lot of games last season where I didn't think that Liverpool looked that convincing. They just went out there, did what they needed to do. And this is not a dig at Liverpool because they deserved to win the title last year. And let's be real, I feel that they deserved to win the title the season before that as well. But yeah. There's lots of games where they're just like, they're just mad chill.
That was the difference between the years when they didn't win the league and the years when they actually won the league is because... they were actually grinding out those results, like those 1-0s against Burnley, those 2-1s against Palace or whoever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Now
this year, like you said, with the complacency, like there is games when I'm just like, I don't know if I could see them getting a point or whatever. But they did today with the penalty.
Bobby Cordova Reed, he scored the opener. Lovely strike.
It was a beautiful crisp finish.
I thought he might have been offside when I first saw it, but then he was a mile onside. It's about Robertson's playing him on.
And then the penalty. It came from a penalty. Mo Salah scored it in the end. It was funny because it was a free kick to Liverpool on the 25 yards out, and Genie Wijnaldum
Curtis Jones got fouled,
and Genie Wijnaldum was taking the free kick. Now, just as soon as the free kick was given, obviously Fulham are leading 1-0. I was like, right, here goes some money on Liverpool double chance here. And as soon as it hit the wall, I knew it was going to be a pen. Now, there's even Liverpool fans in the WhatsApp group that I'm in that is laden with Liverpool fans. They were like, oh, that's a bit harsh, that pen. What are you saying, James?
You'd be livid if it was given against you, because your argument would be, well, he's jumping. Where do you want him to go? They're in a wall, but his arm is up and it struck his arm.
It's probably one of the most stonewall pens for me. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't be aggrieved by that, because, you know, you're 10 yards away. You have enough time to react. Your body, your shape, everything. You know that you are told, it's drilled in. Referees go to grounds or a representative from the referee fraternity will go to clubs, beginning of each season, and give you directives as to what is going to be a foul, what is going to be deemed as a pen and what isn't. That is a penalty. If you are told that if you raise your arm or put it in a natural position in the wall, whether you're protecting your face or doing whatever, if it hits your arm, we are going to give a penalty. So there can be no complaints. No complaints whatsoever for that penalty there today. None whatsoever.
Before we move on to the next game,
yes.
Obviously, they're doing the post-match talk on Sky Sports and stuff. Patrice Evra has just said this. Thierry Henry one day invited me to his house. He said, we're going to watch the Arsenal match. The first image we saw was Xhaka being the captain. Henry turned off the TV and said, I can't watch him be captain of my team.
Evra just said that on Sky Sports.
Just said it on Sky Sports.
Evra loves throwing people under the bus, man. He throws a lot of people under the bus.
I can't stand Evra as a pundit. It's like, do you know what you're doing or are you just fake? Like,
He knows what he's doing.
He's a fantastic
player, but he's like, whoa.
He knows. It took me a while to appreciate him properly. Right, Crystal Palace 1, Tottenham Hotspur 1. Now, Tottenham, I don't think they were expecting Liverpool to drop points here, so they would have been really, really wound up when they shipped the goal towards the end. They were like, oh man, we've missed a trick here by not winning today. That's what I would have felt. And the fact that Fulham were able to get a point, I think they're going to be loving life. Absolutely loving life today.
Tottenham's only saving grace is that literally nobody else around them wanted to pick up points today, other than say Leicester and Southampton. But everyone else drew, didn't they? So I think it is a missed opportunity. But at the same time, it could have been a lot worse had other teams won as well. So
definitely, goals came from Harry Kane and from Jeff Schlupp. Harry Kane's goal. Guaita is getting a lot of stick.
It moves, but it doesn't move enough for me.
Ed?
Are we on about blaming the goalkeeper?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he did poor, but that was his only poor moment in the whole game.
Just take it out of context from the game. Don't worry, we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. But, it was shocking. There's no way. There's no way. He deserves all the stick for that.
Gav, if you're gonna defend him, I'm gonna be upset because
I do defend him a lot because you know what?
He's like 40 yards out. He had so much time to set himself.
He's got so much time. I agree with that. But look at the conditions. Look how wet it was. That ball has moved. Like, that ball, just as it gets to the 18-yard box, moves. It bounces just before him on that surface. Man, come on! I think we're being way too harsh on Guaita there, man.
That penalty,
a banana. The fact that it's a banana, that ball's going dead straight until it gets the 18-yard box. The 18-yard box, then it diverts and bounces literally inches before it gets to Guaita. If that stays at the same level, Guaita's got that. That bounces, skids. That bounces and skids. You know. I feel for Guaita there. Good strike.
He very much redeemed himself during this game with
a lot.
If we were going to do a save of the month's competition, like
he's all of them are from him.
Yeah, he's in this month.
Oh, what's your favourite one, though? Because mine's the Eric Dier free kick.
Mine's not, for one reason.
But no, mine's not either. It's the one, the bit of the goal line scramble. You know, there's three saves in one. The third save in that.
The only reason that Eric Dier one's not the one for me is just because it's... If it was a little bit more in the top corner and he pulls that save off, I'm nutting. But I think it was just a little bit in the middle of the goal when it actually finally got to him. But it's still like the speed he got over there is nuts. Yeah. Such a good save.
It's impressive. It definitely made up for me.
I believe it was Eric Dier who took it.
Well, he scored a free kick for England, didn't he, once?
Yeah, he's was it against
Does that mean anything?
I can't remember. But Jeff Schlupp, he got the equaliser. Can we talk about Hugo Lloris for a moment?
I've never liked him.
I did like him, but I think over the last 2-3 seasons, he is Mr. Complacent. I'll tell you who he reminds me of. He reminds me of Wojciech Szczesny just before he left Arsenal. Because because he didn't get good. That's the worst thing about it. What he would do is he would get Mr. Complacent. He would do things like where, you know, like when you see, you know that the ball's going to go past you and goalkeepers will still try and make a save even though they're not going to get there. And it's like, oh man, well, at least keep making an effort to try and get there. Szczesny never used to do that. And I love that. It's like, he knows he's not going to get there. He's not going to make a tit out of himself by trying to dive for something, which is going at 100 miles an hour that he can't get to. So I used to like that about him. But then he started doing it so often where if he just stuck an arm out, he could stand still, stick an arm out, he probably would have got there. And they're the sort of things that, for me, Hugo Lloris does. I think he's a fantastic leader, but you're a goalkeeper, mate. You've got to stop the ball from going in the back of the net. And I don't think he is. I think Spurs should be looking at someone like Nick Pope.
Ooh.
I think if Spurs don't win the title this year, go for Nick Pope and another centre-half, and you've got all the minerals to win the title the following season. Oh, my God, yeah. Go do a double. Chicken Robber, I don't know what team you support. Who should be made top priority in January? Gareth Southgate, Arsenal. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't even take Phil Neville right now. Swear to you. Absolutely swear to you. Got new viewers as well, which is lovely. How are things going? I found you two at top Twitch channel. Thank you very, very much. Really appreciate it. And please subscribe to the channel and stuff, and we'll do the same for you as well. We love that. Right then, where should we go next? Oh, well, we're going in sort of like...
Reverse.
So why don't we... let's talk about Chrissy Wilder and what's going on there, because it's not great for Sheffield United. Things are bad at Arsenal, but it's bad at Sheffield United, man. But Southampton, they're loving life in third in the table going into like the heart of December, and they've got Arsenal next, so it's a guaranteed 3 points for them as well. It's lovely. Southampton 3, Sheffield United 0. Goals from Shea Adam, Stuart Armstrong, and a returning Nathan Redmond, who is so young.
It doesn't look that easy. Do you know what, honestly, like, just the body language from when the first goal went in, Sheffield United were appealing for handball, but it's come off the top of his shoulder, like the top pretty much there, like he's near his neck more than anything. And there was a few appeals just because they were trying to get the goal chalked off, but the heads dropped instantly. Like, literally, they already knew it's another game. Like, you're already being outplayed. And it just looked like the confidence that was in that team that got them to the heights it did last season in the Prem has long since gone. There is not an ounce of it left. There's nothing left in that team.
Two players that are missing, Jack O'Connell and Dean Henderson.
Yep.
Those two players are there. Sheffield United are in a completely different shape because they were never scoring goals beforehand anyway. We knew this. But they're still shipping goals at the moment, and those two are key to what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if Dean was there or whatnot. I don't even know if that's enough. Honestly, they look bereft of confidence, ideas. They don't look to be changing anything. Like we were saying about adaptability, Wilder is very much the same. He's very stubborn. Like, he likes to play his football. And that's pretty much it. And when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And they really got punished against Southampton. It could have been way more than 3-0. I mean, the Nathan Redmond goal, right, literally sums it up. The geezer literally pretty much waltzes into the box. There was one challenge made on him that was like a really half-hearted nudge from the back or whatever. Even an attempt to foul him was pretty lackluster. And they just summed it up. Like, he just walked through. No one really gave a care in the world. And he just slotted it in. And that's pretty much it. Sheffield United, I reckon they're going to break Derby's record.
Oh, do you know what? I went for lunch earlier on today. I was watching this game out for lunch, and one of my pals said exactly the same. Exactly the same. I can't see where Sheffield United's only point this season came against Fulham. And I actually feel sorry for Fulham that day.
Yeesh. Yeah.
Says a lot, doesn't it?
They're in some serious trouble. We said it the other week, we said it the week before, whatnot. They'd be silly to get rid of Wilder. Because he's definitely the kind of man that will rebuild them in a championship. So, listen, I think they're pretty much resigned to the fact that it is what it is now. So they don't need to do anything silly or knee-jerk. I don't think any manager comes in right now and pulls that Sheffield United team out of the depths. So
what about Arteta? Do you reckon he could do a job there?
He's almost doing a job there, mate. He's almost doing a job there.
next year in the championship.
I know, man. Honestly, who's going to come up? Who's going to come up for the championship next season? Arsenal or Sheffield United? Put your votes in.
You're doing a Sunderland, mate. You are. You're going straight to
League One. We ain't going straight down.
League One, you go. Okay, there you are, Gav. So Chicken Robbers and Arsenal fan. So who would be priority to bring in?
It's Gaffer, mate. It's not a clientele thing. I've said this. It's not a clientele thing. It's the clientele are fine. There are players at Arsenal that can play and can do the right thing and move Arsenal forward. They're being told some random stuff, and if they're being told the right stuff, their manager, so their players do not believe in their manager. It's so obvious. It's so clear to see.
Mad to think that Thomas Partey left Atletico Madrid at the top of the league for this.
I know. It's been sold.
It's also it's been very quiet on the front of a certain someone that loves the ideology of the Arteta regime. Quiet recently. I only ever seem to see a tweet or a post when they do something well. I mean, I think the last time I saw something positive was when they beat United, which was the cup final of the season by the looks of it.
I can't argue with you on that at all. Ed, what are your thoughts on Southampton and on Sheffield United?
You know I love Southampton. I say it week in, week out. I love them. I think they've got a great setup. They are very much just an 11-man team though. They've not got too much squad depth. I think this is probably their peak of what they're going to do under Hasenhüttl, because you imagine in other seasons, other teams will recover, we'll start to see some normality again. Deserve all the credit they're getting. Sheffield United, I did say I felt that last, just similar to Brighton, they feel like they've put 110% effort in, they've still not got the result. It's because Sheffield United lost it in the last minute against Leicester. Was it the last minute? It was the last few minutes.
Yeah, literally, just ticking over to 90.
And I just feel like that's just kicked something in them, where they didn't even look like they had an ounce of that fight today. Because even when they play well, they don't get a point. So, the moment Southampton went 1-0 up, it was over.
Mm. Right then, guys, it's time for this.
What are Everton?
Are you right there, mate?
I don't know. What are Everton? I must have pressed that about 74 times. Yeah, it didn't come up at all. It was great. Anyway, what are Everton? This is classic Everton, isn't it? Just get tonked all the time and then beat Chelsea. Everton 1, Chelsea 0. What are Everton, Stephen Cotton?
I don't know, man. This result proper threw me for a loop. Like, I didn't see this coming a mile off. It's a stonewall penalty before anyone even wants to talk to me about that. Mendy, you can even see in his face, once he comes out and just clatters Calvert-Lewin. And he just instantly thinks, you can see his face, he's like, oh.
He knows.
The penalty from Sigurdsson is just filth, man. Like, those are the ones that when they go right, they look great. But if the keeper just stays on his line and doesn't move, you look like an absolute fool. Max, whatever your name is from Leeds, we'll come into you later. But I don't think Chelsea did really too much wrong in this game. They still looked quite threatening, but I still want to, even though they've won. How bad is Jordan Pickford, man? How many times in this game he came for crosses and clattered with his own defender or just dropped the ball again or doesn't catch the cross? Chelsea should have scored where he came flying out, doesn't get the ball, and he's off his line and they somehow conspire not to score. But it's just like, mate, I think most of the time he's always trying to do something spectacular to cover up for how he doesn't
how
do
poor he is. Gareth Southgate will see this as a clean sheet for Everton. So, yep. I mean, Ed.
How long your winning performance, if you ask
me. Exactly. Ed, what are Everton?
The most inconsistent club I've ever met. I don't know what their aspirations are, whether it's to win the league, get top four, Europa League, get relegated. I never know. you think they might be turning a new leaf at the start of the season under Angelotti, and then Everton creep back into the system. And I thought, here we go. Angelotti's going to go. We know how this dance ends. And then they beat Chelsea 1-0. Fair play to you. Fair play
to you. They did the same thing this time last year, just as Arteta and Angelotti were still, which club are they going to go to? And I'm sure it's the same weekend when Duncan Ferguson was still in charge and they had a dirty run, didn't they? It was like they had Leicester, Arsenal, Chelsea and another big club as well. I think it might have been United. And yeah, it was United because didn't they beat United or get a point against United? They beat Chelsea. Against Arsenal. This time last season.
They beat United 3-1, didn't they?
Yeah, and then they got a draw against another big club, and they got a win against another. And it's like, hold on a minute, this is Everton. But that was just after they left. They didn't allow Marco Silva to look after those clubs there.
Everton are now back in the top four race. They're only 3 points off Southampton in fourth. Chelsea, yeah, you may have lost, but, you know, Frank Lampard can't be too disheartened. If they're only 3 points off top still. They may be in fifth position, but there's only 3 points in that. So,
well, Chelsea haven't beaten a team that are above 13th place in the league this season. So we should probably have a look into that. But let's talk about the most exciting game of the weekend. This one. Cotton, shall I leave you with that for a moment?
I watched the full 90 minutes, the highlights, and it was pretty, I mean, it was drab, but I would say, trying to be non-biased, I thought the main attacking moments in the game was us, if anyone looked likely, apart from there was a chance when Jesus was through and surprise, surprise, managed to mess it up. But listen, man, this was just, this was two teams, shut up, sorry. This was two teams that kind of didn't want to lose this game. I don't think anyone came out like they wanted to push for the win. It was what it was. It was, I think if you'd have asked me before the game, like current situations, if I'd have taken a point, I'd have taken a point. So I'm not too upset. Just wasn't very great for the neutral. I think what was a one card apiece as well. So it wasn't, there wasn't really anything spectacular going on.
And it I was excited for this game.
Yeah, like the way we played as well is like our desperation for a proper striker is nuts, man. Like without, I know it sounds stupid because Cavani's what, 32, and we're relying on him so heavily to be that striker for us now that there were so many times we could have put a ball into the box and there was not one person in the box, or a ball did come into the box and not one person was gambling to get onto the end of it. It just spoke volumes that we are desperate for a striker. One thing I would say, though, because obviously no one ever gives him the credit when he does something good, just when he does something bad. Maguire had a good game.
Maguire had a really good game.
Made that vital clearance off pretty much on the line at the end. And also De Gea made a pretty good save from, was it Mahrez, who probably should have scored.
But... yeah, it's nice to hear you say something positive about De Gea, because I know you're not a big fan of him anymore. I know you were, and every Man United fan was. I personally think that it is his time to sort of take a step back.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that I'm not a huge fan of him anymore. It's just he's had his time. Like, he was incredible for however long. Let's not forget, right, everyone has these like memories of him, but mate, Peter Schmeichel's last season for United was atrocious.
The 99 season?
Mate, honestly, please, because I've watched that season with you 10,000 times.
And I think Man United the most lucky team that season,
He was letting in clangers left, right and centre. He was falling into the net with the ball. He was literally just one error short of being a whole Nick Hancock's Footballing Nightmares DVD. Right. Like, he was bad that year. So, like, De Gea, like, he's had his time. He's been great. Cool. We've got a young, hungry, decent keeper. And everyone keeps saying, like, oh, but do you think he's ready? He played 36 games in the Prem last season. What do you mean? What more do you
need to do? He looked damn ready. Look at the difference that Sheffield United made last season when they had someone like Dean Henderson. So, no, I think you're 100% right.
What's the feeling in the Man United camp, Colin?
What's the feeling?
General emphasis around the fans, because it's been a tough week for you.
It's all the United camp, like the fan base and stuff, is always just so split, right? There's 50% that's like, look, it is what it is at the minute. Ollie didn't get the players he wanted. We wanted a striker and a centre back, and we've ended up getting Van der Beek, class player. Don't need that many midfielders.
Don't need him. Yeah.
So we know that he hasn't been backed. But then you get people going, well, he spent 100 million on Maguire, and it's like, doesn't count. Like, well, it does count, but you know what I mean? It's not, that has no bearing on the situation. 50% want him out because they're like, we're Manchester United, we should be doing better. Based on what anymore? I don't know, because you can't just live off being a good club 10 years ago. It doesn't work like that anymore. It is just really, really split at the minute. And like, especially with the Pogba thing, because Ollie can't win, right? If it was up to me, Pogba now gets the Ozil treatment. Okay, you don't want to be here that badly. You want to be that disrespectful.
Yeah,
in the reserves, you go. And I don't even care if you don't go in January. You stay in the reserves. But then you've got, on the flip side of it, which is kind of like what my unpopular opinion was, that he's still technically, and football ability-wise, the best player at the club. You've got people going, well, why isn't he starting him? Like, people were saying that that's what cost us the game in Leipzig. Like, why didn't he start him? I wouldn't have even brought him on. I'd have rather gone out of that game 3-0 than brought Pogba on. I wouldn't even want to give him the satisfaction. So it is just all so up in the air. Like, you have got people on one hand going, well, we're out of the Champions League. Mate, when we saw that group come out, PSG, Leipzig, I was thinking, well, we're not getting through it anyway.
Well, we came in third, yeah.
But then at the same thing, we've got a game in hand, and we're like 3 points off. We're like, if we win that game in hand, we're like 2 points off top.
Oh no!
But all you ever hear.
But then, if City won that game at the weekend, it would've been like, oh well, City out, back in the title
out.
Race.
Yeah, and Ollie's out, and Ollie's out,
and Ollie's out. Yeah, silly stuff, isn't it?
It's mad, it's mad, man.
One player, one gaffer who's doing really well is Steve Bruce. We Newcastle fans love giving Steve Bruce chip, but he's doing bloody all right. Goals came from Almiron, I'll put Furlough. I've got Furlough on the brain.
I said the same thing earlier.
it's not Furlough, it's Furlong. Let's change that.
Before this game, right, I was watching whatever the earlier kickoff was before this, I was watching it on BT, so it went on to BT Score, and Robbie Savage was talking to Chris Sutton, and they were talking about Newcastle, and Robbie Savage says, don't you dare say anything about that Newcastle are having a half-decent season, because you'll get blogs written about you and nasty tweets sent to you, because Robbie Savage said they're doing well, and the Newcastle fans were like, no, we should be winning this. And then they scored, and he was like, Robbie Savage was like, well, I probably shouldn't say anything, because...
Yeah, so I'll probably end up getting nasty stuff. Ed, what were your thoughts on Newcastle? Were they looking all right to you?
I don't know if I necessarily enjoy watching them play football. I have been a small admirer of Steve Bruce since he turned up after Rafa. I think he's done really well with what he's got. I think they continue to do well under the radar. But no, the football isn't great. I don't think it is great.
Why do Newcastle fans hate him so much, though, Ed? Why? What do you think that?
Because they were hoping to go down another adventure Rafa Benitez, he come in, and I think Rafa did all right. I think it's, I mean, to compare Steve Bruce and Rafa is difficult because they've had different squads, different scenarios. They've both done great jobs. But with Rafa, it was, everything was looking like it was going in a direction. You had Rafa who come in, who's a top-class manager, done it everywhere, stayed with them from the championship, built a connection, and then they were going to sell the club, buy a load of players, win the championship.
So Mbappe was coming in, weren't it?
They lose Rafa due to the owners they hate with a passion. And then they get Steve Bruce in, and then the takeover falls a bit to bits. But who can they blame that on? Who can they kick off at? Steve Bruce is the only one they can get a kick
out exactly.
So
scapegoat.
He's a scapegoat. But yeah, Newcastle don't play great football, but they work for each other, and Steve Bruce wants the wins. So occasionally
they don't play great football, but here's the perspective though. Newcastle are currently 2 points behind Manchester City, and Newcastle have actually lost less. No, they've won. Where am I going with this? Oh, Newcastle have lost only two more games than Newcastle, and they've won the same amount of games this season as Man City. Like, we've said this before. Realistically, what do Newcastle fans want? What do you? Where do you expect to be? It's mind-blowing. But going back to this game, someone I'll give a lot of stick to that needs a little shout-out. Joelinton
actually had a good game. That's one good game in like 70.
His pass for this goal is just outside of the foot, so perfectly weighted, thread through the eye of a needle, takes out about four players. It is just chef's kiss. What a pass.
I loved Dwight Gale's goal.
Oh.
The cross is literally bang on the money, and the header is to match. Now,
but why is the header even better? Why is the goal even better than it could have been? Because it came off the crossbar. Automatically, ten times better.
Yeah, you're right. West Brom, they'll feel sorry for themselves a little bit here. Do you feel that they need to lick their wounds much after this game?
They should feel sorry for themselves after having to wear that kit for 90 minutes. But
it is garish, isn't it?
It's disgusting.
I thought you were going to say something else then, Gav. I'm not going to lie to you.
No.
It is horrible. It is so,
I think West Brom should be criticised a bit more, to be fair, because I think they've had a ton of opportunities and lifelines thrown their way by either the team they're playing on the pitch at the time or the results around them. And even when they could go for the jugular and take the 3 points, they never do. And they end up losing the game a lot of the time. Eventually, their luck will run out in terms of what's happening around them. And I think Bilic might be the first person to go behind the radar, because Fulham's getting results. I don't think Sheffield United's going to sack Wilder. Bilic could look like the next candidate.
Well, Bilic looked like he was going to be losing his job, didn't he? They were saying he's going to be out the door if he doesn't get a result against Spurs. They lost against Spurs, but they had a good performance. In other words, Spurs were terrible and they matched them for 90 minutes. It was like Harry Kane, like a minute before time. So he kept his job after that. I don't understand the premise and the idea behind managers, well, behind clubs, where their manager has just been promoted from the Championship. You know, you're not Nottingham Forest. You know, you can't just get promoted and then the following season win the title. Then the following season win a European trophy. Your first job is to survive when you first get promoted, as far as I'm concerned. But if you don't survive, there needs to be a contingency plan. I love what they've done at Norwich at the moment, and they've kept Valka, and I think they've done the right thing by doing that. Norwich look all right at the moment. They had a plan. It's like, if we do go down, we go down, but we're financially sound. So therefore, we know that we can keep our players, and any player that does want to leave, you know, screw them. You know, we've got a vision where we want to be in 3 years' time. And if you're happy to stick by me to do that, then we'll do it. And I think that's where Norwich got the right idea. I think that's where West Brom should be thinking as well.
I think Bilic gets an easier time because everyone thinks he's a bit of a cheeky chappy, bit of a personality. Do you know what I mean? Everyone thinks he's a bit of a Yeah, exactly.
I don't think he should have lost his job at West Ham.
No, you're right, because we like him as neutrals. We don't.
Yeah, exactly. Like
shooting,
he doesn't get the same. I've just put my headphones.
I think he should have stayed at West Ham. We'll go to West Ham next. We have got another game that we need to talk about before, as well. But Leeds United, 1, West Ham United.
It's my worst prediction ever. Honestly, so I was giving it big and like, yeah, West Ham, have fun in the championship. See you later. I was adamant. I was so convinced. I would have bet my house on it. I really would. Honestly.
I was in that camp as well.
Penalty was awarded after 2 minutes to Leeds, and Matej Klik, he scored it finally. bit of drama around this penalty. I think the giving of the penalty, fine. Bamford felled, but it was ordered to be retaken because there was this half inch shuffle by Lukas Fabianski. Do you think the ruling should be changed on the goalkeeper movement from penalties?
Nope. Whole point of a penalty is it's supposed to be a free shot at goal for the team getting one because you've been stopped in a goal scoring opportunity or whatever. Shouldn't be the case. It's always been the case that they should stay on their line. Now it's just being enforced. Like, how many times have we seen in massive games or finals or the Euros or whatever, and the keeper's literally on the penalty spot? If you can get out quick enough, you could be on the penalty spot before. I know they will call those ones that obvious, but you know what I mean? There's been times when they've been 3, 4, 5 foot off the line. Mm. And what's the point in that? Like, no, they should be retaken.
Ed?
No, I agree. Completely agree with you. Rules are rules, mate. I don't know why we've still got people complaining about this.
Why don't goalkeepers try and be a little bit more clever then and be like, why don't we start behind the line and leap forward?
Yeah, start behind the line and then run at it. Yeah, like, but to be fair, the only reason I'm annoyed at this one is Klik should not have been given a second chance at how bad his first penalty was. I'm surprised the Leeds let him take the second one. It was absolutely atrocious.
His retake was pretty tidy though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was retake. It was nice.
Suchek loves scoring headed goals, and he got another one. And it was so lucky that I saw him at 9-4, which is brilliant. And then Ogbonna at the end.
Do you know what? Meslier, for Suchek's goal, it was cleared behind the line from Rafinha, but it had already gone in.
Yeah.
Meslier made some really, really, really cracking saves in that game.
Yeah.
This one, Chris Packett wrist, man. It literally just like Swiss cheese hands went straight through his hand. It just wasn't good.
Do you think he's got a future though? I think he's going to be. I honestly think he's going to be a world class goalkeeper.
Well, yeah. After looking at him now, I thought he was 5'9", didn't I? And he's 6'6".
He's 6'4". He puts a bit of weight on. He's only 20 years old. 20. Goalkeepers don't hit their prime for another 6, 7, 8 years at least. You know, I think Meslier has got all the minerals to be a world-class goalkeeper, and I'm really looking forward to seeing his growth, and I think he's at the right club. I really do.
Aaron Cresswell has he assisted his fourth goal of the season. I would say I'm a big fan of Cresswell.
Yeah, his 200th appearance as well, which is pretty tidy.
Was the Cresswell assist for the Ogbonna goal?
Ogbonna.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a crispy header.
Lovely
whip. That was a really nice
lovely header. Ogbonna always seems to score important goals. Doesn't
he's been around forever, man. Like, he played in Italy. Like he was at Juve. Is it Juve? He's been everywhere, man. Everywhere.
He loves it. I'm still a bit weirded out by West Ham. I still feel like there might be, you know, it's last season they started off the season really well and they fluffed their lines in September. This time is a little bit different because it's December. I think they were really unlucky against United last week.
Well, that's why they did well to bounce back, because they were in good form prior to that and they just got straight back to it.
Yeah, it was not an easy game. It really isn't an easy game to do it in. Our last game, though, it was the Mike Dean show. Let's put it that way. There's no other way around it. Wolves 0, Aston Villa 1. El Ghazi with a 94th minute penalty. After there was red cards for Douglas Luiz and Jean Moutinho. Now, considering the game was 1-0 and the goal came right at the end, I was excited by the game all the way through.
I watched the second half of this one. I was quite disappointed by this game, actually. I thought Grealish was poor. The fact Aston Villa won, considering they went down to 10 men, was a... What was it? Was it Semedo?
Yeah, for the penalty. Yeah, it was just tired, weren't it? But do you know what? I even texted you during this game. Like, I was so annoyed, man. It was everything you expect it to be. It was the Mike Dean show. There was yellow cards for just simple fouls that didn't need to be bookings. He just wouldn't let the game flow at all. Everything was me. It was embarrassing to watch. I mean, even towards the end of the game, like, I know we've always said a yellow is a yellow no matter what time on the clock or where on the pitch. But I was sending people off for second yellows for, like, silly little niggly fouls in the 94th minute. Like, why? What was the point? And in that game was his 3,000th yellow card. And yeah, I think he knew. He just wanted to mark the event with just, like, what was it in the end? 9 yellows and 2 reds. Like, I can't stand him, man. I honestly can't. He might be our best referee, but just how he always makes everything about him is just too much, man. It was like pantomime.
I felt like it was two teams that both wanted it, and neither team was scared, and both teams wanted to do something and create something. I really enjoyed watching this game.
Neto is sick. I don't care, man. Like, I see that geezer run past two or three players at once. Honestly, I feel that they're struggling to score goals, obviously, without Jimenez, but Neto's trying his damn hardest to set someone up.
Podence is a guy, and I could see him going places. He's only young still. What's Podence? 21?
Something like that, yeah.
I could see some big moves going in there. Before we go, I just want to say about Jack Grealish. He had a bit of a... couple of snaps going around this week.
That's the thing, Ed. That's exactly it. Because we like him and we think it's a bit of banter... It is literally like, whoa, look at Jack Grealish sucking on some titty. Go on, you lad. And then, like we've said before, like Mason Greenwood goes out and it's like, well, he should know better. He's an idiot. He's a fool. And it's like, make up your mind. They're either all idiots or it's not. Like,
now, the Grealish one, though, has he got a missus in that already?
I don't know. That's the thing.
It's never been reported that he's got
a
missus.
Lady of the night.
I think she was a lady of the night. Yes.
Who took the picture?
Paul Pogba, probably. I know Sunez is somewhere like...
I see that, man.
Yeah. Jack Grealish. I'm asking myself, what's Paul Pogba doing? I think it's the third time this season, or at least since like the restart after lockdown, this is like the third time Villa and Grealish have had to come out and say sorry for their behaviour. Like, there was him driving drunk, him being drunk in the street again, him breaking lockdown rules for a party. Now he's in a hotel room... Yeah, like, it's just, like, why, how is this just, again, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but is there a certain reason why this guy is allowed to do it three times and not be hounded and harassed, whereas one person does it and it's, do you know what I mean? I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but...
Well, I think it's just a prime example of proving and Jack Grealish going out there to say that black lives really do matter. Anyway, thank you very much for watching the watch along as well as the Premier League review show. We're going to be back on the air tomorrow looking at some Champions League stuff and reviewing game day 6 in the Champions League, as well as looking at the last 16 draw. Other shows that are happening this week, we're on the air twice next week and doing the Bundesliga show, as well as, I believe, Friday, we'll be looking at the Premier League games that have happened during the week, because we have a full fixture of Premier League games. But you can follow us on all social media at Two at Top Football, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. And did you know, if you put Two at Top into Google, our name comes up first? Yes, it does.
Southgate out.
So for myself, Gav Mac, Ed Hall, and Stephen Cotton, thank you and good night.
And Southgate out.
I was just waiting for you to say something silly before I press the button.
I'm glad that's become a thing.
Southgate out.
Southgate.
Arteta out.